Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast Dishing with Stephanie's Dish. I'm Stephanie Hansen. Sometimes that's not always easy for me to say. I am here and I'm excited to be here with John Kung, and he is the current master on YouTube as well as Instagram. John, you have like 563,000 followers on YouTube, 330,000 followers on Instagram. I don't even know how that's possible.
I mean, I'm not the biggest content creator out there, but I'm grateful for anybody who's willing to take the time to watch.
You must be really good at it. Did you amass your followers like early on in the platforms, or did you just have something go massively viral?
No, I initially started on TikTok, and I had started posting videos on TikTok during the pandemic, and so there was like an initial explosion of people. My biggest platform is actually TikTok, and because I had been working over the past few years to kind of diversify where I put my videos and my content, that translated into some amount of growth on the other platforms. I found a lot of success on YouTube, just simply because I wanted to make longer videos, more in-depth recipe videos. And then on Instagram, it's still like the best place for people who just like want to see you to come find you. So, as far as that goes, like, yeah, they all have their strengths and weaknesses, and being on all of them has been it's been a lot of work, but it's been worth it.
And you have over like, isn't it like close to 2 million followers on TikTok?
At 1.7.
I mean, just yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just jumped right into the meat of your socials, but can you give us a little bit of background about you? You're on the podcast because you have a new cookbook coming out, Chinese American Recipes from a Third Culture Kitchen. And I'm just curious about you and how you got started. And you're living in Detroit, which is one of my favorite cities.
Yes, and not that far off from you.
No, and you have the best farmers market in the world.
Oh, so you've been to Eastern Market.
I have.
Yeah, it is just a magical place. It still feels like a farmer's market. No hate to Pike Place or any of the other farmers markets out there, but like I've been to most of them, and I've been to most of them as most of like the historic ones and stuff like that. Eastern Market is still very much like a market first and not like a tourist destination or anything
Absolutely.
like that.
Absolutely.
You
And
still have like people on forklifts wheeling around like whole pigs, just like on the road and stuff like that. It's only like a public place pretty much on Saturdays and Tuesdays, and every other day it functions as a food hub for not just most of Michigan, but a lot of Canada as well.
yeah, it's a really incredible place. And I always tell people that Detroit is a great 4-day weekend. Like, there's a beautiful museums, there's the historic row houses, there's an awesome maker community, great restaurants. Like, it's just kind of a hidden gem, I think.
Absolutely. And if you come during the summertime, you can hit a music festival. There's not a weekend that there isn't something going on, some kind of like music festival, whether it be techno or jazz or anything. Like you can find it here.
Last time I was there, and this is a true story, I sang karaoke with Martha Reeves from Martha Reeves and the
Oh
Vandals.
my God, and the
Yep, at a
Vandellas. She was on
barbecue
the city
shack.
council for a while.
Yep. And same weekend, there was a reunion of the P-Funk All-Stars. George Clinton was not there, but the P-Funkers were, and it was in a historic neighborhood. It was like one of the best weekends of my life.
I remember the one time I ever saw George Clinton was I was at the mall, and it was back when people still lined up to buy iPhones. And there was this huge lineup at the mall, and I was just looking at it. And then there was just this guy that just goes by, and he was wearing like all kinds of crazy clothes. His hair was like all rainbow colors and all sorts of dreadlocks. And it was George Clinton cutting the line to get an iPhone.
That's funny. And in Detroit, I'm sure they let him too. They were
Oh,
like,
of course. Yeah.
come to the front of the line, friend. Okay. So that is our connection to Detroit. John, what does it mean to be a third culture person?
Oh yeah, so to be a third person of third culture just simply means that you were raised within a predominant culture. Generally, they call it the culture of your parents or the people who raised you, and where you lived happened to be situated very strongly in a place of a different culture. So I grew up very Chinese in my household, but where that house happened to be was either in Toronto or Michigan. So. Very, very different worlds outside of our front doors. And that gives you a certain access to nuance in terms of communication, in terms of appreciation of media, and certainly down to food.
And when you put together your when you started creating content, you are a professional chef. I don't want to take that away from you because I think sometimes the people that really blow up on TikTok maybe aren't necessarily professional chefs, and you certainly have that pedigree and you've got this cookbook. What was it about, like, have you always cooked because you had pop-ups and you've done a lot in the food world?
Yeah, so I started off in the food and beverage industry. Before the pandemic, I had been probably a chef of my own place for maybe 4 years up to that point, and had been a cook in some way, shape, or form for probably close to 6 or 7 years before that. So I had a lot of experience in the industry before moving on to media. But I mean, I will stress that, like, it when it comes to social media or whatnot, like,
John, can I just
it's
put you on hold 1 second? Someone just rang my doorbell, so hold
oh
on.
sure.
So, John, I just put you on hold because the dog was barking because someone
Oh,
was
okay,
ringing
no
the
worries.
doorbell. And look what arrived.
Oh, there it is.
Your
You've got
cookbook.
your
So,
copy. Yeah.
I did. So, look how cute you are. You look all rustic on the front. All right, I love it. Okay, so we were talking about you had your own restaurant, and then after the pandemic, you transitioned into more media. What was it like to have your own restaurant?
It was having my own place. I operated a private kitchen for about 6 years in Eastern Market, actually. And basically, it was a one-man operation until it was show times. And basically, what I would do would be these elaborate tasting menu dinners on the weekends, for anywhere between like 16 to 32 people.
Yep.
And I operated with a team of five. I had a dishwasher, I had a sous chef, I had two servers, and then myself. And I would just like construct these menus out of themes, mostly like films that I really appreciated, and have these like theme dinners that were curated down to the tablescape, to the music, to the lighting. It all followed the theme. It was very experiential, and it was very like the theater of dining based.
How
Which
cool.
actually, like, you see experiences like that now on TikTok every now and then, I feel like. But I was doing this in like, what was like 2016, 2017. Yeah.
So, can you just give me an example of like one movie theme that inspired you?
Sure. I did a lot of stuff with the films of Hayao Miyazaki.
Oh, sure.
So films like Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, Ponyo, Porco Rosso, Howl's Moving Castle, all of those films had corresponding evenings and dinners and menus. And basically, what I would do is I would just like watch the film over and over again and construct courses that were based off of either character studies or colorways, or even down to like, even if at its most simple, was if they were cooking a food on the film, especially with the case of the film Spirited Away, there was a lot of beautiful food on there. And a lot of it was Taiwanese, which was like a cuisine that I was familiar with cooking. I would just recreate those, but more interesting would be the ones that were based off of characters and stuff.
That's so cool. My daughter loves those movies, so I'm gonna have to tell her about you because she also loves to cook. So you have really built up this following. One of the things that I think is cool about your cookbook that now has arrived is the way that you organized it because your chapters are interesting. Do you want to talk about why you chose to do that?
That is a good question. It just felt like a natural way for me to dish out my food.
So there's
I,
like, go ahead.
oh yeah, so I will admit that I am not a very big consumer of food media in any form. The cookbooks that I have are referential cookbooks. They are more like encyclopedias and textbooks and stuff like that, and not any like real mainstream cookbook. I do collect them, but I don't really read them very much. Or I don't have a habit of flipping through a cookbook back to back unless it was like something that was referenced.
Right.
And so I, because of that, maybe it was out of just an ignorance of how to actually write a cookbook. This is my first time writing one after all. I just did what made sense and I categorized it in a way that made sense in my mind. And you're not actually the first person to say that it was a different way of doing it, but yeah, it just seemed like a natural way for me to do it.
Yeah, I liked it. So you have broth, snacky snacks, slow, hot, and wet soups, noodles and dumplings, rice and congee. I mean, having a whole chapter to congee, my radio partner, we do a radio show about food together, and pretty much has been obsessed with congee since the pandemic. So I might have to let her peruse here. You've got a fish congee recipe that looks really good.
Thank you. Yes, I do really like that one. Very, very easy to do.
Your cookbook. So I'll be honest, I have a few Chinese cookbooks and I look through them and I enjoy the stories and I enjoy the culture pieces, but I find them hard to cook out of. And your cookbook looks really accessible.
Yeah, so I think that might just come from the fact that, first of all, the whole point of me writing this cookbook was to encourage other people to cook out of it, and not just cook out of it, but to kind of encourage them to give them room to express themselves and their own culture into the food that they learn how to make from the book. That's why I do such a large focus on the pantry section. And
Yep.
how to make spice mixes, how to make infused oils, things that are easy to add to other things. I always say that people always overlook the pantry section to most cookbooks when that is the section that will give you the most bang for your buck in terms of time. Because like a chili oil will last last at least a month in the fridge. And that stuff on anything. You put on fried chicken, you put it on pizza, you put it on pasta, whatever, and it would be great. And that's only one thing that there is only something that you make once. So I want people to like make things like that and then like apply it to like their own home recipes and their own cultural recipes, whatever that may be. And to do that, I had to like really do a focus on trying to make the recipes accessible. Like some of them are challenging. There is a whole chapter at the end on more challenging recipes, things I think will are worth your time. But I guess it also goes into how I format the book as well. It's like it's kind of like it works at a graduated level. It's like do this chapter first, and then this one, and then this one, and then eventually you work your way up to the end.
Right. I'm for sure making your fermented chili paste. That looks amazing. And I have to shout out the Wisconsin cheese brick used in your
Of
curry mac and cheese.
course, of course, of course. It is the preferred type of cheese used in a lot of Detroit style pizza places. It is the superior melty pizza cheese. I believe it is superior to mozzarella. Sorry, but not sorry. It's Wisconsin brick or nothing at all.
And are you watching Top Chef Milwaukee?
I cannot watch those shows because they give me such anxiety.
So
Because like
funny.
all I'm thinking of is like I'm just thinking on behalf of the contestants who are obviously there at their on their own accord, but at the same time I'm thinking to myself, well, that's not
That's funny.
that doesn't make any sense at all. And so I get really stressed out watching it, so I generally don't watch competition cooking shows, which is probably
That's
the same reason why I've never been on one myself. I've been
Yeah.
invited, but I was like, no, I don't think so. I'm not ready to like cry in public that way yet.
Yeah, it's how I feel about watching like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm and shows where like people just say all these like embarrassing things that everyone wants to say,
Yes.
but nobody does. I can't watch those
Yes.
shows.
Yes. Absolutely.
You are coming to the Twin Cities. Tell me about your book tour and some of the fun stuff you have planned.
Yeah, so I'm just doing a short little stop at the Twin Cities. I had been once before. I was invited by my friend Kushbu Shah, who was at the time the restaurant editor for Food and Wine, and she was there on a scouting mission, finding like next best chefs. And I had such a good time while I was there. And I hooked up with a friend of mine who invited me down to do a book talk at a cook, not a cookbook shop, but a shop called Subtext,
Yeah,
in the middle of this on the 23rd. And yeah, that's where we'll talk about our books, and that's essentially it. I'm
Yeah,
gonna enjoy my time over there.
I'll put a link to the appearance in the show notes here so that people can get tickets because they're free, correct?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure they are. Have you done any readings yet or cookbook touring yet?
I have actually. I'm off the heels of my major cookbook tour, which was in the fall. So I did a tour that was like New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Chicago, and then Detroit. I did like a homecoming that way, and I've done another one in New York since, and then now I'm just like kind of like going where I can, where I want to go.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't go to those other places, but you know, stay close to the Midwest and enjoy myself.
Did you have any? This is like a weird question, but book tours are weird because, like, sometimes you show up at this like little bookstore in this town where someone has been gracious enough to host you, and you sit there and like maybe two people come in and you're just mortified and you're trying to like chat up the purveyor of the store because they're so nice to carry your book. And then other times, like you go and it's like a mob scene. Have you had kind of the whole gamut of the cookbook experience, or because you're so popular on social media, do people show up everywhere?
I have been very lucky. I've also only really so far been to larger cities. My speaking partner, Chris Stedman, is kind of locally well known locally, so I'm hoping that that would encourage people to come by. He's got an amazing podcast and is like just local academic and a darling. So I think I've confidence in his ability to draw a crowd. And I haven't had any situation where like it's been an empty room. I think the closest that it's gotten was like last week when I was at the Detroit Public Library, and I came in, and I think like maybe only a quarter of the seats were full, and there were probably like 40 or 50 seats, so it did seem kind of empty at the time,
Right.
but I just also forgot at that moment that Detroiters are just late
Oh,
for everything,
that's
right?
funny.
So it filled up by the time that the talk was done. The place was absolutely full, and I was just like, this is right. I should have known better than to be
Okay, well,
on
technically,
that.
your book's appearance, Subtext, is located in St. Paul. And you need to know that people in St. Paul are like 5 minutes early to everything.
Oh, that's perfect. That's great. That's great,
Okay,
because
because people in
I'll be.
Minneapolis are 5 minutes late.
Oh, that's funny.
So if you're, this is no joke, if you're doing an event in St. Paul, like you have to plan to be there in advance because right as the second it ticks that the event starts, it's going to be full. And like Minneapolis, you've got like a 10 to 15 minute slow roll while everybody kind of casually comes in.
Well, I'm in that case, I'll probably have a pretty good idea. If it's empty, it's empty,
Yeah,
basically.
exactly. Okay, we talked a little bit about off the podcast recording about our dogs. Can you tell me about your dogs? Because you have look like what look like two rescues that look just like my dog Stanley.
Yes, so I've got two rescues. One came from the animal control, came from Detroit's animal control facility, and the other one came from the Humane Society of Detroit. Both of them are pit bull mixes. People in Detroit say you can have any dog that you want so long as it's a pit bull. It is a very just like common dog to have at the rescue shelters here, but luckily, because I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine who came in from the West Coast, people in Detroit are at the very least more educated when it comes to pit bulls and bully breeds, understanding that there isn't as much of a stigma. Honestly, if I ever found it, if I ever came across somebody who had any issues with pit bulls, they were always from out of town or out of the city and like a transplant in.
Yep.
They are the sweetest dogs. They are absolutely the most darling things. I always had a firm belief that if you could afford to buy a designer dog from a breeder and you could only do that, you would be better off spending much less money rescuing a dog and then sending that dog to a professional trainer, which is what I did with mine. I originally had thought of maybe like getting like an Ardell Terrier from a breeder, and I was like, well, you know what? No, let's just rescue one and then let's just like put it through private school. Because I've had two dogs before, also rescues, but I never like before, the social media blow up, and so I couldn't afford to get them trained. Trained dog, is the greatest blessing ever. Like I tr there's dogs that you train, and then there's dogs who have been to a trainer. And like I took Boba to a cafe. I was just at a cafe posting a recipe onto my blog, and she just sat under my chair the entire time, just totally calm and almost like service animal calm. And nobody bothered her. She didn't bother anybody else. She was the sweetest thing in a pink little hoodie. And like she's just my little angel. I love my dog so much.
They're very cute. And I loved that on your Instagram profile, you were like, mostly the stories are about the dogs.
Yes, people keep asking me if my dogs will ever have an Instagram page of their own, and I keep saying it's like if I do that, I will have nothing to post onto my stories.
That's funny. I've had a lot of dogs. I think this is like my seventh dog. And I've always had variations of labs, basically, because they're just rescues too. And now it's really hard to rescue a dog without a certain percentage of it being pit, just because of the way that the stray and the dog situation has worked. And when I got my dog, I thought for sure it was a lab. It was 5 months old. And as I did more research and got the DNA testing, I realized, wow, well, I have 28% pit. And then I had some terrier too. So I started to get nervous because I was like, wow, I have all these little kids in my neighborhood. Like, I have to be a good training companion for this dog because I want it to have its best life. And it's going to have its best life if I know how to handle it. And it has turned out to be really smart that I got training for the dog and have a good level of comfort with him. But also, I've never had a dog that was so attached to me that needed so much like touching and love and
Yes.
companionship. That's new for me.
So much. The thing I love about pits is that they have so much personality. And the difference, and my first dog was a black lab. My second dog was a smaller terrier mix. And then these next two were pit bulls. My mother has all Frenchies all the time. So I've been around a variety of dogs. And I gotta say, like, there is something about pit bulls is that they are confident animals. They are self-assured animals. And the way that they focus that confidence is in how much they absolutely love you if they love you. They will love you with their whole heart, their whole chest. And sometimes and that generally just means like, how when you like just are so aggressively attached to something, you just want to squeeze them. You just like, oh,
Yes.
I love you so much, I just want to
Cute
squeeze you. I just want to
aggression.
bite your exact like cute aggression. Like for any of my other dogs, they would probably be like, what the hell are you doing? You're so weird. But
Yes.
for pit bulls, they're just like, more of this, please.
Yes.
Yes, all of this. Give me more. Just squish me. Just hug me and squish me.
I
And they're
never
not.
had a dog that I ever let on my bed. All of the dogs I had, there was just a no getting on the bed rule. And this dog just wore me down because he just wanted to cuddle with me all the time. And finally, I was like, fine. So
Yeah,
we've
the thing is,
gotten
like,
a
you
little
know that
lax.
they're not on the bed. They're not on the bed because they want to be on something comfy. They're on the bed because they want to be next to you.
Yes.
And it's hard to say no when you know that's why.
Yes. And my husband was like, you're just a sucker. You're just a sucker. And now the dog's like looking at him like, come on, you know, I can be on the bed with you too. Well, it's been fun to chat with you. Congratulations on the book. I anticipate that I'll be cooking some things out of it and I'll make sure to tag you. I love the colors. I like the way it's organized. I will pay particular attention to your pantry section because in Chinese cooking, I feel like condiments are a lot of where it's at. And also,
Yes.
can I just acknowledge your beautiful knife collection?
Thank you so much.
Yes, so beautiful. Do you have a ton of them?
I do. I was that kind of line cook that was just obsessed with knives earlier on. Now I don't really. Now I kind of like have a, like a one in one out rule.
Yep.
At this point, because I'm not trying to get into the upper echelons of collections, but I do have like a bunch of knives that I do really, really like that have
I
been
love
with me
it.
for many years.
Thanks for being my guest today. It was fun to chat.
Thank you so much.
All right. And just in case you're looking for the book, it is John Kung. It is Kung Food, the Chinese American Recipes from a Third Culture Kitchen. I'll put a link to it in the show notes and again to your appearance that's coming up. And thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.